Hello, this is Dr. David Friedman, host of To Your Good Health Radio. The sands of time come with extra candles on the birthday cake, wrinkles, weight gain, aches and pains, and we're told this is just part of getting older. To some, age is just a number, but could aging be a choice? Dr. Sarah Gottfried, New York Times bestselling author of Younger, is here to share how the signs of aging and disease come from lifestyle choices, not our genes. If you want to increase your lifespan, change the way you age, remain healthy and energetic, don't go anywhere. It all starts now.
It's To Your Good Health Radio with number one bestselling author and renowned wellness expert, Dr. David Friedman, changing lives just for the health of it.
Our next guest is a Harvard Medical School and MIT graduate. She's been featured in print and television media, including Fox News, NPR, Huffington Post, Woman's World, and Cosmo, just to name a few. She's the New York Times bestselling author of The Hormone Cure and The Hormone Reset Diet. Her latest book is called Younger, a breakthrough program to reset your genes, reverse aging, and turn back the clock 10 years. Please welcome to the show, Dr. Sarah Gottfried. So great to have you on the show. Now, your first two books focused on hormones. Tell us about your latest book, Younger.
Yeah, you know, I had this experience where I got my hormones to a really good place. And that was, you know, what I wrote about with my first two books. And then the whole technology of telomeres came out. So I'm sure your listeners know about telomeres, the little caps on chromosomes that are a marker of how fast you're aging. So right. Your biological age as opposed to your chronological age. And what happened, David, is that I tested myself and I found that I was aging 20 years faster than my chronological age. So that's what got me kind of focused on the issue of aging, because clearly I wasn't doing it right and I needed to turn that around.
Right. So that was a little scary. I mean, here you think you're a certain age and you get this test back that says, wow, you're actually going to hit the grave sooner. That was a wake-up call.
It was a wake-up call. I was 45 at the time. I had the telomeres of a 65-year-old woman. That's not the result that you want to get. So, you know, I've got two kids. I've got an amazing husband. I've got a lot of patients to serve. And so I wanted to turn this around. I wanted to figure out, okay, what are the levers of aging and how can I change them?
Yeah, I know so many people blame poor genes and why they're overweight or why they're unhealthy. How much actually is DNA to blame?
Well, when it comes to chronic disease, you know, the things that really age you fast, like Alzheimer's disease, diabetes, heart disease, it's only about 10% genetics and about 90% lifestyle and diet. So it turns out that your genes don't control your destiny. It's really the lifestyle decisions that you're making that make the biggest difference. Now, that varies from disease to disease. Like with addiction, it's a little bit higher. The genetic effect right. is more like 50%. But when it comes to aging, it's about a 90-10 rule.
Wow, that's interesting. I know I had a patient yesterday say, oh, you can't help my left knee. It's painful because it's just old age. I said, well, how's your other knee? And she said, oh, that's fine. I said, well, weren't they born on the same day? you can't blame age. Everybody wants to blame age. So it's great that you're here telling us that it's just an excuse. I know in your book, you talk about health span, and most of us have heard of lifespan. Share with us, what does that term health span mean?
Yeah, health span is really that period of time that you feel fantastic. So you're in your prime. It's really lengthening middle age as long as possible. Whereas lifespan is different. It includes disease span. So health span is that period of time where you have no diseases. You're really free of these conditions that age you fast.
Right. That's great. I know for, you know, family members that do have like Alzheimer's or cancer or heart disease in their family, is there something they should be doing more so than people who don't have a family history of these diseases, or is it the same?
Well, I still think it's a good idea to know some of your genetics or to know your family history, because that does provide a blueprint. It's 10% of the story. But, you know, I think all of us need to be making these lifestyle decisions every day that slow down the clock, that slow down the aging process. So whether you have Alzheimer's in your family or, you know, cancer or high blood pressure, I think that's important, and you may want to consider some genetic testing, but really it's the lifestyle choices that have the biggest impact.
What would you think would be the worst lifestyle choice? What are people doing that's really aging them the most?
Well, I would say diet is probably the most important lever when it comes to slowing down the aging process. And I think, you know, folks who eat too many carbohydrates, that definitely accelerates the aging process. How does it do it? Well, it tends to raise your blood sugar. And blood sugar tends to go up as you get older. You know, around age 40, it starts to go up by about 10 points per decade. And so eating too many carbs, so we're talking about, you know, Americans' favorite foods like pizza and donuts and desserts, those are the things that really accelerate the aging process.
We just lost all of our viewers and listeners. They just hung up. You ruined the day.
I know. But you know, I think it's important to realize that good diet, you know, getting your, I recommend a pound of vegetables a day. I know that sounds like a lot, but right. it really makes you happy. It slows down the aging process. It really makes your DNA happy. And that's what we want.
Right. I know there's so many diets out there. There's eating like a caveman and beef and keto and plant-based. Is there one particular that you feel gets the healthy seal of approval?
Well, you know, I like to think of myself as agnostic when it comes to food because I think it's important to work with people where they are. But that said, I think the best diet is the one that controls your blood sugar. So for some people, that's keto. A state of mild ketosis has been shown, for instance, to be helpful with preventing mm-hmm. Alzheimer's disease, especially if you have the APOE4 gene, the gene for Alzheimer's. For some people, eating low carb can really make a difference. But if you're female and you have issues with your thyroid or adrenals, you need to be careful about going low carb. So I think the answer is to do an elimination diet, to really find what foods serve you best, slowly add them back and see which foods you can tolerate. And then, you know, make the choices based on blood sugar. So you want to have really good blood sugar control. You want glucose to not go too high or too low in your body because that's what tends to hasten the aging process.
Something I wanted to ask you, you are the hormone queen. So I've been wondering how much of the normal aging process versus being exposed to these chemicals like these endocrine disruptors are to blame. I know that people blame their genes and why they can't fit into their genes. But back in the early 1900s, you know, 5% were overweight. So most of us had thin great grandparents. So we really can't blame them. And they had the same hormones as we do. What they didn't have back then was these chemicals. How much are they to blame?
I think we can blame the chemicals for quite a bit of this story. You know, my great-grandmother was born in 1900, so she's a good example. And she was thin all of her life. She wasn't exposed to the endocrine disruptors that we're exposed to now. You know, there's more than 700 known estrogen disruptors, as an example. There's thyroid disruptors. There's insulin disruptors. But another big difference is that our food supply has changed. You know, my great-grandmother didn't eat packaged food. She ate whole, real food. She ate fruits, you know, like an apple was small and kind of tart. Now, today's apples, hybridized by the food industry, are much bigger. They're like 2 to 3 times the size. They have much higher levels of sugar, of fructose, and they're super sweet. So the food supply has changed, and that really tracks with the obesity epidemic.
Yeah, you know, with so many authors writing books on how to eat like a caveman or eat like a gorilla and go with a plant-based, you and me, we should collaborate. Let's write a book, Eat Like Our Great-Grandparents.
I think that would be very powerful. I totally agree with you.
All right, let's do this. That sounds good. Hey, you do mention a term in the book called exposome, and when you're looking at our health, share with the listeners what that means.
Yeah, exposome is an important concept. It kind of makes some people's eyes glaze over, so let me just take a moment to explain this. Exposome is the exposures that you have over your lifetime. So it's all the endocrine disruptors, all the chemicals from eating food that's processed, and it's all aggregated into a particular influence around your DNA. So there's the external exposures that you have, and then there's also internal exposures. So certain chemicals that you get exposed to can trigger a response inside of your body, and that can be toxic. So it's an important concept to think about with your DNA and how you're interacting with the environment. It's you can measure it through the exposome. And it can be as simple as a blood test. You know, there's a blood test that a lot of people get with their annual physical called the ALT. It's a measure of your liver enzymes. And that's a marker of how much fat you're accumulating in your liver. And it can also be a marker of how many environmental toxins you've been exposed to. So there's ways to measure this. It's not just, you know, like some nebulous concept. It's right. Something that you can actually measure.
So if somebody does get the blood test and they see that they're, unusual numbers, what can they do? Is there a way to improve our exposome?
You can improve your exposome. I think, you know, definitely I've got a chapter in my book, Younger, for how to do that. Fiber is always a really helpful thing. Removing sugar, reducing the glycemic index of the food that you're eating so that you don't have that strong blood sugar response to food. Those things can help to improve your exposome. And if you fear that you have quite a few exposures, I think it often can be very helpful to work with a functional medicine doctor. Sometimes if your liver function, for instance, if your ALT is greater than 20 in a female or greater than 30 in a male, that's a situation where I think it can be very helpful to work with a clinician who knows how to clean up your exposome.
Right. I know a lot of experts are focusing on gut and the microbiomes. And where do you feel that falls in our overall health and weight? Is that an issue?
Oh, it's a huge issue. I think the microbiome is so important and is going to be a huge part of the next 10 to 20 years of medicine. I think we're still, at the tip of the iceberg in terms of understanding the specifics of how to make details about your microbiome into something actionable. But a lot of the basics still apply here. I mean, the biggest influence that you have over your gut health is the food that you eat. So we talked about eating a pound of vegetables a day. That can make a huge difference in terms of the amount of fiber that help to grow your good bacteria, your good bugs in your gut flora. You can also take probiotics. My favorite is to actually eat probiotic food, things like sauerkraut and kimchi. We know that those help to lower your blood sugar, so it also promotes the good bacteria in your gut.
So the gut and the microbiomes also has a link to hormones, correct?
Oh, they definitely do. So the more, kind of bad bugs that you have, the higher your estrogen levels, and that can be a problem in terms of increasing the risk of breast and prostate cancer. That particular collection of bacteria are called the estrobilome.
Right.
So, and then it works in both directions. So it turns out that if you have a lot of stress, if you have high perceived stress, that can actually poke holes in your gut, and that can lead to a disruption of the microbiome and lead to more of the bad bugs and not as many of the good bugs. So hormones are definitely affected by the microbiome and vice versa.
So when patients come to see you, you can literally say to them, I hate your guts, but we can change that.
Well, here in California, we tend not to say that, but my husband's from New York. I think he would say that.
He would get away with it. Yeah. He'd say, yo, I hate your guts. That's great. Yeah. I noticed you use the word inflammaging, which is interesting. People usually associate inflammation with injuries and arthritis, not aging. Share how that plays a role.
Yeah, inflammaging is a great term because it combines the aging process with inflammation. And we're finding that pretty much every disease process in the body begins with inflammation. So this is kind of, with inflammation, when you cut yourself, it takes you about 3 days to repair. And that is inflammation. That is part of the repair process. But when inflammation lasts more than 3 days, that becomes chronic, and it leads to many problems. It leads to weight gain. It leads to stiffness in your joints, and it also accelerates the aging process. So we want to slow down inflammaging, and there's a lot of ways to do it. We talked about controlling your blood sugar. That's a huge part of this. And this is, especially for the people not necessarily with diabetes, but the people who don't know that they have problems with blood sugar. Because I don't know about your experience in your clinic, Dr. Friedman, but I find, you know, about 70% of my patients who have pre-diabetes don't know it until they start to come to see me. So we really want to be aware of some of these problems that lead to chronic inflammation and faster aging. You know, if you just control your blood sugar, that actually helps reduce 60% of the cognitive decline that occurs as a result of the aging process.
Wow. So it is, it's funny because I interview a lot of different experts with different opinions, but we all seem to agree sugar's the public enemy number one. That's what it seems everybody agrees on. So there's nobody coming, oh, I don't believe that sugar's good for us. You just don't hear that. So, you know, it's definitely
sugar and vegetables. Those are the two things we agree on for sure.
Yeah, that is true, though. And, you know, one of the chapters in your book, Younger, is about sleeping. Now, people don't realize how important this is and how not getting deep restorative sleep can wreak havoc on their health. Share with us how sleeping helps us stay younger.
Yeah, sleep, I think, is as close to a panacea as we have. Like, it is a cure-all. And I didn't always respect this. You know, I used to kind of cut the corners with my sleep, and I thought I could get away with 6 hours. It turns out only about 4% of the population does well with less than 7 hours of sleep. So the goal for most of us should be to get between 7 and 8.5 hours of sleep every night. And one of the reasons why this slows down the aging process is that there's a shampoo that happens in your brain every night. It's called the glymphatic system. And it basically cleans out all the toxins and all the debris that you have in your brain. So if you don't get your 7 to 8.5 hours every night, you're going to have that debris start to collect, and it can lead to problems later on down the road, like 10 to 20 years later, greater risk of dementia, greater risk of Alzheimer's disease, and many other chronic diseases.
Right. And people don't realize it wreaks havoc on your appetite hormones. So it increases your ghrelin, decreases your leptin, makes you hungrier and eat more. And, you know, people don't realize they literally can't sleep their pounds away. If they would just get some deep restorative sleep each night, they could see some of that belly fat go away.
Exactly right. You know, in one night, it raises your cortisol levels. It raises your stress hormones. And that also contributes to making you hungrier the next day so that you're not making good decisions. You're not choosing, you know, the cup of steamed broccoli. Instead, you're choosing the donut. So I think really focusing on your sleep every night, especially your deep sleep, it's something that I track every night when I sleep. And I think it's really beneficial to optimize it. It keeps you from not only aging fast, but it keeps you from falling down that hormonal flight of stairs that leads to, as you described, the weight gain, the poor choices, the you know, choosing not to exercise because you feel too tired. So it's really a panacea.
Got it. I know in your book, Younger, you list 5 key factors that lead to accelerated aging. I'm curious, is there one particular you found to be the primary ager? Would it be lack of sleep?
I would say lack of sleep is really important. Yeah, I would say that maybe is the most important because it's, you know, for a long time we didn't know what sleep was, like what's the purpose of it. And now we're really getting a sense that it's when not just the growth and repair happens, like all the good hormones get produced, but it's also where all this repair occurs. And your body needs a lot of repair, especially as you get older. You don't need it so much, you know, when you're a teenager. But after, I would say, age 30, you need that repair to be happening. You need it to be happening behind the scenes, and sleep is the number one place where it occurs. So by repair, I also mean healing. Like, that's where the healing happens. It happens with your insulin receptors so that you don't have insulin resistance. It happens with your blood sugar control. It happens with getting all of that crap out of your brain.
Right. So a lot of people listening say, what's she talking about? I sleep every night. And there's a difference, though. What would you recommend for people that maybe don't get the deep sleep? Is there something they should be doing that will help them get to that nice REMs and dream? So many people don't dream anymore because we're not hitting that deep restorative sleep zone.
Well, I think, you know, sleep hygiene is really important. So going to bed at the same time every night, you know, what I used to do is I would skimp on sleep during the week and then make up for it on the weekend. It turns out that doesn't work. Another thing you can do if you don't get your 7 to 8.5 hours is you could take a nap during the day. So 30 minutes of a nap actually counts as an hour of sleep at night. So there's a lot of ways to really improve your sleep and to get that quantity that I'm describing. There's also some supplements that I think can be helpful. We can talk about those if you'd like.
Yeah, what are some good ones they can add?
Yeah, so I like to use melatonin, not long-term, but just as a sleep resetting medicine. So I tend to use it for like 1 to 2 weeks, and I also use it for jet lag. I'm not a fan of huge doses. I like to give, you know, somewhere between about 0.3 and 1 milligram, ideally sublingual. And it's just a way of more gently working with the body and increasing the melatonin that a lot of people don't get. You can also get bright light during the day and reduce your artificial light at night as a way of improving the amount of melatonin that you're making at night, which helps you sleep more deeply. I also like ashwagandha and phosphatidylserine. I think those help a lot with improving sleep. There's some herbs that some people find to be helpful, like valerian and hops, and they have some modest data to support their use. And I think the key is to commit to it and to, you know, if you can't improve your sleep with supplements and with sleep hygiene, and naps, then get some help. You know, go see a sleep specialist, get a sleep study.
I know a lot of men's ears perked up when you said hops, and they're thinking, she said I could have a beer. You better explain
that. You can have a gluten-free beer.
Not too much, because then you get up and have to go to the bathroom because your bladder fills up, and you're like, darn, I was sleeping so good, but I had all those beers.
Well, that's another important point, because alcohol tends to disrupt sleep. You know, it affects your blood sugar, and it raises your cortisol the next day. It slows down metabolism. So, you know, I love a fine glass of wine, but the truth is it disrupts my sleep so much that I've had to dramatically reduce the amount that I drink.
Yeah, I did as well. I found the same thing as well. And plus, you know, if you're looking for weight loss, having that alcohol before bed or at nighttime, you'll see dramatic decrease if you can cut back on your alcohol. That sugar really, really does pack it on. I've seen people, one lady came in the other day, looked fantastic. I said, well, what diet did you do? She says, I just stopped drinking wine every night. I said, that's it? She says, that's it. And she lost about 50 pounds. It was unbelievable, because she would do every single night alcohol before bed. And then, of course, you're going right to bed with all that sugar. So that would be something that's a good advice, not to do that before bed.
That's huge. And I think that's such an important pearl to share with our listeners, because, you know, I understand why people drink a glass of wine or two every night. Like, they feel stressed. They're trying to de-stress. I totally get that. But the very thing you think you're getting from alcohol, it's actually robbing you of it. Like, it's not de-stressing your body. It's raising cortisol. It's disrupting your sleep. And so it's amazing that something as simple as that can lead to, as in your patient, 50 pounds of weight loss, because it probably fixed her cortisol. It reset her insulin levels. It helped her blood sugar. She wasn't as puffy. Her liver didn't have to work as hard. She improved her exposome just by doing that one simple thing.
That's great. Other than what we talked about, is there one other thing that people can do tomorrow to improve their health span?
Well, one other thing I'm kind of obsessed with is taking saunas. Can we talk about saunas for a moment?
Yeah, saunas.
Yeah, you know, there's this gene called FOXO3, and it's a longevity gene that you can turn on by taking a sauna. So there was a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association showing that if you have a sauna for 20 minutes, 4 times a week, it reduces cardiovascular mortality by 50%, and it reduces all types of mortality by 40%. That's huge.
Wow.
Like, there's no pill that does that. So a sauna is my highest recommendation.
That's great. So it's getting that sweat going, getting those toxins out.
It's a form of moderate exercise because of the way that you sweat. It helps to improve your exposome. You put that together with good sleep, and you pretty much got it made.
Oh, fantastic. Well, thanks so much for being with today. Such great information. I'm sure everybody took notes, except for the beer drinkers out there. That's great. Anyway, It's great to have you. So to learn more or to get your copy of Younger, go to sarahgottfriedmd.com. And while you're there, make sure you check up, sign up for her free newsletter so you can stay up to date on the latest health, hormone, and anti-aging tips delivered right to your inbox. Also, check out Dr. Gottfried's healthy supplement line and informative articles that she's written. All good stuff. I've read them. And you can follow her on Instagram and Twitter at Dr. Gottfried. And on Instagram, it's SarahGottfriedMD. For my daily tweets and posts, follow me at Dr. David Friedman. And on Instagram, I'm at HealthRadioDoc. If you heard something today that you want to share with someone, which I'm sure you did, that just didn't tune in, send them a link to this podcast. It's available at toyourgoodhealthradio.com, and peruse our podcast library and share these segments of interest with friends, family, coworkers, and on social media. This information is too important to keep to yourself, so share. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iHeartRadio and iTunes. That's my New York iTunes. More to come. Stay tuned and stay well.